everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two sponsors. This lovely first episode of 2015, we have the Responsive Web Design Summit. That's rwdsummit.com. We'll get you where you need to go. You know about it. It's an Environments for Humans online conference. You can attend anywhere in the world. 3 days coming up March 10th through 12th. Use discount code ShopTalkShow for 20% off. We have a winner for that coming up later in the show. So if that's you, congratulations. If not, you're going to have to buy a ticket. And lynda.com, that's L-Y-N-D-A.
L-Y-N-D-A.com
/ShopTalk. And for the new year here, they have extended their free trial for 10 days. It's longer than you have gotten in the past. So go to lynda.com/ShopTalk to sign up from the biggest learning resource there is on the web. But for now, let's kick things off.
Hello there, Shopper Maniacs. You're tuning into season 4 of the Shop Talk Show, a podcast all about web design, development, and anything else we want to bring up. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer.
Yeah, that's right. Did you forget my name? I know it's been a long time.
I'm here with Kronky Coyer.
Thanks for joining us. We have a whole quarter of what do you call these things? Podcasts lined up.
Q1.
Yeah.
Y215.
I'm starting to say Q1 now that I'm an adult. It's weird. Q1 and stuff. We have with us Mr. Nathaniel Deal. Thanks for coming on the show with us.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, awesome. This is going to be a good one because Nathaniel is an interesting fellow. Lots of cool stuff that you're doing. Can you maybe give us the rundown of you and what you do and stuff? I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, no problem. I am a front-end developer in Atlanta. I work for 352 Inc. Work there Monday through Friday like everyone else. And in the afternoon, I kind of work on Arduino stuff and building cool stuff that my kids like. Most of the stuff is for my kids. It's kind of how I got into the Nerf thing and building crazy Nerf guns that shoot people.
Yeah, I can't wait to get into that. If you all don't follow Nathaniel on Flickr, check that out. Is that the primary place you post them, or do you have like, or do you use Instagram or anything? I was just looking at your Flickr, and there's just like crazy looking gun after crazy looking gun.
Yeah, I have Instagram, I have Flickr, and I have YouTube where I do videos for most of the guns that I work on.
Nice. I need to see me some video of these things. just because this is exciting, let's talk about that right away. So these are like controlled by hardware that you buy and assemble and make and everything, and you do it for your kids. I just want to know everything about this.
Okay. Yeah. So the first one I did was an autonomous Nerf gun that has a camera on the top, and whenever it recognizes your face, it kind of points to you and tries to shoot you in the mouth. So the whole purpose is to shoot people in the mouth with Nerf darts, and they seem to love it. My kids, every time I'm kind of testing them out, they're just my little test subjects, and I just mow them down with Nerf darts. Got video of that too, so if you want to see that, I can post some.
That's any video where a kid gets smashed in the mouth with a Nerf dart, I'm like, I want to see this. So.
But yeah, it's been fun.
These are conceived by, I mean, do you start with some kind of existing plot? I mean, these are like, they look like they're from the future.
Yeah, it's, I go to the, you know, go to Walmart or whatever and pick up some Nerf guns and try to mount them to things and control them. I can control them on my iPhone now. So that's kind of the thing. I'm just sitting around controlling my iPhone, shooting at people. So,
yeah. They would be cool anyway, like, but they're controlled by, you know, like you said, the first one you ever did had a camera on them. Is there any other like cool mods like that that do reactionary things?
Yeah, well, the camera kind of feeds into the Arduino, and it tells the Arduino which way to turn. And, you know, once it picks up somebody in the crosshairs, it shoots them. I've also taken Arduino and did a dart counter. So in the future, I kind of want to infuse the two where it can know how many darts it can shoot. And by the time it, you know, runs out, it'll stop shooting people. So,
yeah.
Nice.
Stop pulling.
And you got these like cool, it's like you like added this Halo style dart counter.
Yep.
I mean, it's total FPS. Like, I don't know. I was just like, this is the coolest thing. This is like, it's like a video game now. It's epic.
It is. The dart counter is actually, I was trying to find one to buy and I couldn't find one. So I just took on the challenge to make one. And I did. I've been getting a lot of praise for it. So I think people want to actually start buying them. It was inspired by Halo, so you got that.
No,
you got
there you that go. One. I mean, dude, it looks exactly like a Halo UI. It's wonderful.
Oh. That would be the world's coolest business. What do you do? I make custom computer powered guns. Oh, the dream, man. Okay, so and then 352. Are you sitting there right now?
I am not. I'm at home. It was so cold today in Atlanta that they canceled school. So I'm at home with my kids.
Yeah, we have that. We have that going on in Milwaukee too. It was a brisk -7 this morning. My
wow.
house.
Woo.
Yeah, it's a little dangerous. Anyway, so
if anyone spills a glass of water on the road in the winter, all of Austin shuts down, and it's like somebody spilled a Coke on I-35. We've had to close all roads. All schools are canceled. We can't handle cold. Nope.
And we work on computers, right? So you can, I'm sure, can even if you take the day off, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Be involved a little bit. So what do you specialize in while you're there? I know you have to do a bunch of stuff with responsive design and you're just front end developer and stuff.
Yeah. Basically, how we're set up is we have these kind of 5-6 man teams and we take on projects, just one project at a time. And I kind of serve as the front end role for those teams. And right now we're working on the mean stack using Mongo, Angular, Express, and Node. And
whoa, really?
It's pretty awesome. Yeah.
How do you like mean stack? I have to ask. I did like a little bit of exploration, and the Angular stuff just seems super heavy. I guess you're just used to it at some point, right?
Yeah, it's I love it because I can go in and do everything in HTML. I don't have to worry about some, you know, compiler or something coming behind me and changing my stuff up. So everything's basically in HTML, and then they just bring in the data and, you know, get it live. So I love it.
This might be touching into Hollywood here. Uh-oh. But the previous episode with Tom Dale, he talked a lot about Ember, which is, you know, competing similar kind of framework. But a lot of people were very, very, I guess a lot of people really hate progressive enhancement, and the show was very highly tweeted. And it's just very interesting. A lot of people agree with the sentiment that, hey, I like these frameworks that do JavaScript. I'm just going to use them. So it's interesting. I find it very interesting. So I'm really kind of like interested in what life is like as a mean developer or an Ember developer or whatever.
I've actually tried Ember. I really liked it. I like the way that it templates and pushes out the code, but it's more back end. And how we separate our teams is the back end kind of does most of the, if it was Ember, they set up the templates and the routes and stuff like that. So I wouldn't actually get into that type of stuff. But Angular just has so much, it has like directives for everything. So whatever you want to do is like already built for you. You just kind of like bring them in and stack it up. So, that's the route we're going. I mean, I wouldn't go anywhere. I came from .NET. I started in the ASP forums and then we moved to the MVC4 thing, and now we're in Mean, and I don't want to go back. So
nice.
What is the Express part of Mean? That's the one thing.
Express is how you talk to the MongoDB. So it just kind of gets in between and it pushes. It's kind of like the model of some sort.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like a Sinatra on Node, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just say, get this URL or whatever, this argument, and then spit out this. It's a web server.
So. Okay.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. I wonder if, yeah, I don't know. Like, and I'm trying to think of a way to like rate these frameworks from somebody who, I'm like Nathaniel in that, like, a lot of times, like, I don't really care what the choices are. And I'm not saying that you don't, I don't, but like what the choices are a little bit sometimes in the back end, because I'm just going to write some markup and some CSS and poke into the JavaScript when I need to get this page to do what it needs to do. So if the rest, you know, your rest of y'all want to make a bunch of choices about the data and stuff, you all go do that.
I feel the same way, man.
It's like, I'm just going to make web pages and could you just make it work?
But while that's true, also at the same time, once in a while, like, I'll want to do something. I'll want to be like, you know what? I want to make a meetups page for our site and I want it to be at /meetups. And for now, I don't really even need your data and stuff. I'm just going to I need to link up a new style sheet and I need a new route because it's going to have a URL or whatever that goes to it. And I need a template that I can put there. And I don't want to bug anybody else to do all that stuff. Is that
that's good.
Is that so, like, in the mean stack, the Express would handle the URL part? And, you know, I'm trying to like place the parts.
It's mostly like Angular talks to it. Angular just kind of talks to everything, and it just, they're just backups for Angular. Like, so where the data is, how we get the data, and then the data shows up on the front end, and then that's where they kind of go in and manipulate my HTML to show the data however they want it. But I'm all about really clean markup so I can see it at the end of the day and understand what's going on. And, you know, with .NET forms and stuff like that, you have no idea. You're just like, it works, I think.
Does it? Angular change how you
put a bunch
think
of XML
about
in the machine and it's working. What were you saying?
Push the XML button.
New XML website. XML.
When you're like thinking Angular style, are you like when you're like writing markup and stuff, do you write it without all Angular stuff up in it, or have you like changed your thinking to be like, well, this is where ng something needs to go?
I do. I think Angular wise, but I don't actually put the markup in there. I just kind of like, I make sure that when they want to repeat stuff or if they want to hide and show stuff, that stuff's ready for them when they come in, and they just kind of knock it out. I just leave it. It's, they put magic on it and then they send it back, and it's like, yeah, there it is.
Sweet. All righty. So what else? Is there anything else that you've been thinking about a lot lately or caring about or doing in your life you want to?
Well, I have some kids for sale. If anybody's interested in buying.
I'll take the middle one.
Oh, yeah. The middle one. He's a riot. No. So my life is basically, you know, work, kids. I actually picked up some Cub Scouting. So that's kind of getting crazy. And just, you know, making Nerf guns, and I try to do the coolest thing I can figure out. It's like, what's the coolest thing I can figure out? And it's like, all right, let's make a gun that shoots people in the face when they walk into my house. All right, let's do that.
Is there a badge you can earn for that? Maybe there's a computer badge or something.
I've actually been looking into doing Nintendos and Xboxes too. So I kind of want to start getting some Xboxes. And so like getting an Xbox and doing like a Halo theme on top of it and then selling the Xbox. Like, you know, custom cut out Halo characters or something in it. I don't know. Maybe a dark counter in there. I don't know what I'll do, but I'm kind of getting into that. But just whatever I think of, I just want to just get out there and do it. And that's what I spend my free time on now.
Awesome.
Cool.
Dave, well, you got any, there's a news in Lincoln here.
So this is just a thing. Worked with this guy, Drew Wells. He made, so if you are on Compass or something like that, and you're trying to do sprite sheets with Compass, like Compass is pretty good at that, but you want to like break away from Compass and go like full libsass. This, my friend Drew made this this thing called Wellington, and it's like github.com/Wellington/Wellington.
You broke apart the spriting stuff from Compass?
Well, so made a whole new thing. It's the same kind of API, but it's like a it's a little Go app. And I don't know if you guys know what Go is, but it's like this just basically self-executing, you know, almost C library, but not quite, you know. So it's just like fast as heck, and it doesn't really slow down like SAS. So you can use it. It's like a companion. It's the sprite companion to Node SAS or whatever. So it's kind of a cool thing. Like, your mileage may vary. I like haven't got it up and running, but I just said he's mentioned it. And so I was like, dude, I'm going to talk about it because it is actually super useful if you're trying to break up with Ruby SAS. So could be pretty cool. And I'll post a link here in the old chat room. So
yeah,
there you go.
I like it. I like sprites are still a thing is the point. You know, like I've been a little out of it because I've been so buried in SVG land for a while that it's like on sites I work on, I try to like have as close to zero raster images as I can on them because I don't know, SVG is cool and stuff. But, you know, if you have any raster images, you're still thinking about trying to combine them together. Like anything can be sprited. Get those raster images combined and don't do it by hand because that's a pain in the butt. So this is a piece.
Well, and like if you're doing like raster images at scale, like let's say you have a big site with hundreds of different sprite sheets and stuff like that. So every time you save a SAS file, it has to go compile all the sprite sheets. Dude, like you're talking
slow minutes,
like, you know, minutes worth of work. So pretty cool. So yeah, and Charles in the chat room is saying libsass 3.1 dropped. That's like the node or just C library, but it makes it easier to break up with Ruby SAS. So it's really feature complete.
I haven't kept up with that for a while. They're thinking that libsass, you know, like if libsass could be the canonical SAS, that would just be good, right? That idea that SAS is slow, that whole argument just gets gone. But I think the problem was that the SAS, like the masters of SAS, like Nathaniel and stuff, aren't interested in being like, but like the other Nathaniel, sorry, the Nathaniel Weizenbaum, right?
All right, yeah, let's clear that up.
is like not interested in working on that one, so thus it can never be the canonical SAS, which seems
That's interesting deal. I don't know. I think it's, I mean, like it is.
I don't know if that's 100% true, by the way.
Well, it's like Hampton Catlin and Chris Epstein are all kind of working on this like Node SAS one, so, or Lib SAS. So I feel like it's got the community legs.
Right. So maybe like it just by default will become the canonical SAS, and too bad.
Yeah. Well, and we've used it here and there, and like, man, it does most things, you know. It may bite you way down the line.
Are you guys? In the mean stack? Can you pick whatever preprocessor you want, or do you avoid them, or what's your?
You can. Yep. You can use anything. Less SAS, Compass, anything. Yeah. As long as with SAS you got to put Ruby on. That's the only drawback. But except for libsass, which we really haven't kind of got into. We're mostly less over here. It's just not because of, you know, either way, it's just that's kind of where we lean towards. And, you could use anything. You could put Angular on top of .NET if you were like wanted to shoot yourself, but yeah, you could do all that.
Cool.
But like the mean stack isn't even like, that doesn't even make your .NET guys like, those guys can still like write an app or whatever, a interface or something that populates a MongoDB, and then the front end's just still mean stack.
You know?
Like, it's not mutually exclusive.
Nope. So. That's the great thing about it, is it's agnostic to what you want to use, and we can, and developers pick it up really, really easily. So it's just, you know, blessed to have these guys who can just back me up with, you know, just data when I need it. So if I don't get the data, you don't get a website.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that like a tattoo?
That's like the perfect, I mean, content driven thing, you know. That's like Karen McGrain's dream is having, I don't know, the content first.
Yeah.
I have to have the content to build your website. So anyhow, well.
Well, we have lots of questions to get into here. Just, you know, things related to building websites and stuff, responsive design, all that good stuff. Maybe we should do sponsor first, though, and this will be a fun one because I'm going to tell you about the Responsive Web Design Summit again. That's rwdsummit.com coming up in March here. Both me and Dave will be at it. It's March 10th, 11th, 12th. It's a 3-day thing, which means you can attend any day that you want to, or all 3 days. 20% off if you use coupon code SHOPTALK. So remember that. Christopher said we could give away a ticket, and we've told you that 2 weeks in a row, and I said that I would pick a winner this week, so I did that. 18 of you lovely people wrote in with one. So there's more. I think what really sparked it was when I said the other week that I was like, only like 2 people had done it by then. And I'm like, you have a really good chance of winning. And then a whole bunch of people did. So I ruined your chances a little bit. But 18 people wrote in. I used a pseudo random number generator to pick a number between 1 and 18. The number that came up was 3, which was Mr. Omar Bravo. So bravo, Omar Bravo. You win. And maybe we should just skip down and do his question, because that would be kind of interesting. But, I mean, you know all about these online conferences, right? Attend them anywhere in the world. There's a live chat room there. It's super cool. You can buy a ticket for your whole office if you want to, and sit on couches and not pay airfare and stuff. But, you know, Mr. Dave will be there talking about RWD bloat, which is one of my favorite Dave topics. It's such an awesome Dave topic. He like shoots That'd down all good. these reasons why websites can be slow. Because people are like, responsive website design is slow. And then Dave's like, why? And then they have reasons that have nothing to do with responsive web design.
It's awesome. it's myth busting. Mm-hmm. It's a myth buster episode. I actually, now that I think about it, I did steal the formula from a Mythbusters episode. Whoops. Yo. All right. It's going to be a fun time. So it's like these online summits, we talk about them all the time, but they're like my favorite because like you don't leave your house. So it's great. And this one's going to be good.
All righty then.
All right. So question from Omar Bravo, winner of our contest: with the increased popularity of the Grunt Task Runner, have you guys migrated away from CodeKit altogether, or are you using both CodeKit and Grunt simultaneously, or just CodeKit? If I'm a lone designer developer not working on one team, shouldn't CodeKit have all the functionality I need? Hashtag RWD Summit.
We have we had the CodeKit fellas on, so that's would be a relevant episode for you to listen to, Omar.
I'll dig it up.
But the idea is kind of that CodeKit can do this limited subset of things. Have you ever used it, Nathaniel? That little Mac app that's like, I'll do your pre-processing for you.
Yes. I love CodeKit. I love CodeKit 2 more because of the way that you can do the responsive design, where you can connect it to all your devices and update them all at one time.
Yeah, so that is a cool feature of CodeKit. You get this. It runs its own little web server, and thus when you're using CodeKit, you're at that URL, a special URL that it gives you. And that URL just does all the magic. Like, it inserts stuff kind of magically in between. And like Nathaniel was saying, you can visit that URL. And in anything, you could use crossbrowsertesting.com and open the URL there. You could open up the iOS web simulator and do it there. You could have 5 browsers open or whatever, and then you change green to red, and instantly it's updated on all those without a page refresh either. It does that injection style thing, which is really cool. So that's a benefit of using CodeKit that you don't necessarily get with Grunt, Omar, although you could put it into Grunt, right? Because so the difference between CodeKit and Grunt is CodeKit has this very specific set of things that it's going to do for you, and Grunt is just, there's hundreds if not thousands of little tasks that you can make Grunt do. right? It's all you configure it yourself. There's no UI for it. It's all in code. It gets, you know, it's part of your project or whatever. So they're just, they can do similar things, but they don't have to. I've never worked on a project that used both. That seems kind of weird. I feel like if I'm going to go Grunt, I'm just going to do it and just do it all in Grunt. But so yeah. I guess there's no reason that you couldn't use both, but.
Maybe to do like, I don't know, image optimization or something. They're pretty good at that. But other than that, yeah.
Like Grunticon or something.
Yeah, you kind of keep them separate.
Yeah, right. Like CodeKit doesn't have an SVG sprite builder in it. And that's one thing that I use on all my sites. So I'd have to use Grunt for that. But it's true that if I was going to do four things, let's say, like, you know, minify and concatenate JavaScript, minify and concatenate CSS and preprocess and stuff, and optimize raster images. CodeKit can all do those three things, and it's like, all I need is one more thing, which is sprite building. I'm not going to move all those things over to Grunt just because I need one more thing. Maybe I would just set up Grunt just to do sprite building, but I don't know. Omar, the deal is, you know, Grunt is no UI, it's all config, that type of thing. And if you only do the things that CodeKit needs to do, then use CodeKit.
Yesterday, Chris Coyer called me a hipster because I used the SAS watch command from the command line.
Yeah, we're working on a revamp from the Shop Talk site. We had a bunch of internal work we need to do, and we thought we'd do an external job too. We actually weren't using a preprocessor on the CSS on the Shop Talk Show site. And I was like, what'd you use? Because I was kind of like waiting for him to say Gulp, because I know Dave kind of likes Gulp. And I was like, all right, I'm going to have to get that set up. I've used Gulp a little bit before, but I was like, do I have to do some learning just to work on our site? And Dave's like, I did SAS watch. I was like,
Chris
really?
Is like, ooh, hipster. Yeah. I'm like, what? Oh, well, I guess it is. It's like, yeah, I drive a fixed gear. I wrote a fixed gear. So here's my question. Ken Howard PDX in the chat room is mentioning like that server injector refresh. Let's say I'm working on a site for a podcast that missed its ship deadline, but I would like to use the kind of browser sync functionality. Does it work in WordPress, or do I have to use its kind
well,
of
you,
home-based
you,
server?
I use it. I use CodeKit on all WordPress sites.
Yeah, you got to use CodeKit.
You have to use MAMP also. You know what I mean?
MAMP plus CodeKit, it works.
Yep. So CodeKit does have a server, and that's kind of neat, but I wouldn't even really think of it as a web server. I guess it is kind of, but it's kind of like it just points to where you're actually running your server. Okay. And it only does that because it wants to do the cool injection and live syncing stuff. Like it's just exploiting the powers of a server that way. It does not replicate our actual server, really. I mean, I don't know if that's fair to say, but it's just like a little exploit to do cool stuff on top of.
Right.
So then do you have to add the little live reload into your WordPress template?
No. It just works because not if you're using the CodeKit URL. But Ken is right. It is kind of weird that you have to run both servers to get it to work or whatever. And then you have to point CodeKit at the MAMP one. And there's another little caveat here, too, that we use on the Shop Talk Show site. I know they've been a sponsor in the past, but there's this plugin called WP Migrate DB Pro. The way that when you're working with CodeKit and WordPress, it does this on-the-fly thing where it replaces every single URL on the page with the code kit version of the URL. Let's say the local version of Shop Talk on my computer is shoptalk.whatup, because it's fun to make up names for what you want the thing to be. When I go to my CodeKit URL, which is like Chris's MacBook Pro port blah 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 whatever, that's the CodeKit URL, on the fly it replaces all instances of shoptalk.whatup with the weird CodeKit one, and that just makes WordPress work in there okay, but it replaces every instance of that. So if I open up WPDB Migrate Pro and pull it down, it replaces database stuff with the CodeKit URL, which you do not want. It makes stuff break. So if you're going to use WP Migrate Pro, just temporarily just go use the MAMP URL and do it, and then come back to CodeKit. That's like not clear, but.
Don't migrate from the CodeKit URL.
Right. Do not do that. Basically. It will break stuff.
Interesting. All right. Well, maybe I'll have to fire it up.
I'm going to do it because I can just pull down from WP My DB Migrate Pro, and then I can, you know, you're like, I don't want to use PHP MyAdmin to do this thing where this is some inside chop talk.
Yeah.
But I think then it'll be a lot easier to run locally.
All right.
I can use SQL Pro then. Okay, let's do more questions. We have Nathaniel here to give us insight on things.
Oh, man. I'm Chris, you didn't put the 400 word I hate your podcast question in here.
Oh, yeah.
That's too bad. We got some pretty good hater mail. Here we go. Chris Alice writes in, I do declare, I frequently hear that using display none to hide elements that only appear at certain breakpoints is bad practice. What's the better preferred method?
So you do lots of responsive design stuff, right, Nathaniel? Are you quick on display nunning things to hide them on mobile or that type of thing?
I think so. Yeah, I do the visibility hidden and the display none just to make people mad at me. So it's I do it all the time. I'm guilty. And if I do SVGs, I'll hide parts of it. But I love to display none. I don't really know what's wrong with that. What would be wrong with that?
There isn't anything inherently wrong with display none, I don't think.
A southern gentleman from Atlanta hiding duplicated markup. I do declare. I have never.
It's very unfair to people who need access to that content, and display none hides it from them. From an accessibility standpoint, I think is the idea. Like if you're hiding something because you want it absolutely not on the page anymore from any standpoint, whether it's visually or from somebody using assistive technology, fine, then hide it from both people with display none. But sometimes display none gets exploited when you're trying to hide something only visually, but your intention is for it to be accessible still, in which case you would kick it off the page with some kind of negative left whatever.
999999.
I love that.
I think so. So for me, I do align with kernel standards on this. I do try to always reuse my markup, mostly because it's dry, because you're not repeating yourself. Like if you have a mobile navigation and a desktop navigation, right, or whatever, because you couldn't figure it out for whatever. And that's, I've had to do that. So chances of you catching and updating in both places kind of goes lower, I don't know. I just feel like it's more prone to mistakes if you've repeated yourself. But, I don't know. It's as I get older, maybe this is me just not caring. But I'm just it's just less and less. I'm just I'm just going to hide that on desktop or whatever. Because I could do a lot of absolute positioning and all that and figure it out. Or just display none.
It's true that it's indicative, as Wonder Yak is saying in the chat room, that it's indicative that there's something on the page that would be better if it just straight up wasn't there at all. So it means that you didn't really, take a mobile first standpoint or, just load the things that are needed for that particular view. And of course, everything's a trade-off. So it might not make sense to, put in a whole, conditional loading framework to only load the thing. I mean, if you're just hiding one little module because there's no room for it, certainly display none is a lighter weight option than adding an additional JavaScript library to handle conditional loading for you. But it is something to watch out for. If there's lots of stuff that's being display none, you could be like, maybe we should take an opposite approach here and only load the things that we do need rather than hiding the things that we don't need.
Right.
Just stuff to think about, Chris. We have another question here from Alex Miller. I have a question about responsive websites and SEO. I am a WordPress developer, and I have two menus for a responsive website. So he makes this main menu, usually visible on large screens, he says, and a second mobile menu, which will be just different. It's,
I was literally just talking about this.
Right. It's kind of like, the case is that he's working on a responsive website, but for whatever reason, one set of markup and CSS isn't cutting it. So you have this, you just design the menu twice and you hide one and show the other, or vice versa or whatever. And is that okay? And Alex is worried that that actually is solving his problem functionally, but will you be penalized for something like that from an SEO standpoint?
I would say no. And you can always go and look at your cache version through Google to see what they actually are caching. I don't think Google doesn't really care about your markup anymore. They're really caring about your content and, you know, is it authentic? Is it pertinent to, you know, to your page? I don't think that two sets of menus is going to hurt you or help in any feature.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. Especially because it's navigation. It's right. Like, who cares? If you duplicated your content twice in the markup because you know, one of them you wanted font size 16 pics and one of them you wanted font size 12 pics or something insane like that, I could see that being a problem. Then that I could see that confusing a Google bot. Like, why are there two of every paragraph that's exactly the same? That's
well. So the navigation on my website is web developer Austin, Texas, web developer Dallas, Texas, web developer San Antonio, Texas.
That may be fine.
That might be flagged. Okay.
Just a little bit.
Web developer Paris Hilton.
Yeah, web developer Paris Hilton, web developer Snapchat, web developer Instagram.
I think you'll be okay, Alex, although I would say that if you can get away with one set of markup that just transforms itself into a mobile appropriate version, then go for it, because that's kind of cool. That's like the fun, nerdy CSS-y way to approach things. But maybe you can't do that. Maybe there's markup that has to change as well. And if you have two of them and you're hide showing different ones, fine, whatever. You know, websites all the time have different sets of navigation. I think you'll be okay. That's the final word. I think we're all in pretty good agreement on that. Let me do another sponsor really quick. Lynda.com, which is at
LYNDA.com.
That's good. I
nailed it.
/ Shop Talk is the one you'll get if to give Shop Talk show credit, which would just be lovely. The world's largest learning resource on the web. That's copy that I say all the time. They didn't even give us that one, but it must be because there's so many thousands and thousands of courses on there. They said, you know, I like this is actually fun. We have some new talking points for them, and one of them is like titles that you might enjoy, which makes me feel like we're listening to like This American Life, and they're doing the Audible spot, and they're like, they, you know, suggested titles for This American Life listeners are, you know, and then they do the titles. But yeah, their ones for us is Jeffrey Zeldman has a course on there, Until 20 Years of Web Design and Communities, for some perspective. WordPress Essential Training, and P.S. I have a WordPress course on there too for theming. And they have this new innovative series called Code Clinic, where each month Lynda.com issues a code challenge and authors share their solutions using a variety of different programming languages, which sounds fascinating. And that's going to be the first thing I listen to on Lynda this year, I think. I like that idea of, like, you know, throwdown challenge. It should be a TV show. Solve this with the mean stack. Yeah. Cool. So that's lynda.com/shoptalk, and it's a 10-day free trial these days, which is a little cool. A little upgrade.
It says in the notes they have 505 web-related courses. Not to overwhelm you, but I found it interesting that 505 is the server error for HTTP not found.
Oh.
So there you go. That's just
trying to connect things. Yeah, there's so many courses. Photography, anyway. Everything. Okay.
No, I was going to say, actually, better. I was going to say, if you take Lynda up on their offer, hit us up on Twitter and let us know what you're studying. So, at Shop Talk.
That'd be neat.
Yeah. I there's probably cool stuff that we aren't finding, and so you should tell us about it. That's what I'm saying.
You know what's the thing that's coming up is, like, I keep forgetting about this because everybody was all talking about the Apple Watch for a while, and then I kind of forgot that it's actually going to be like a real thing that you can actually buy and put on your wrist if you were so inclined. So, Joel, I don't know why that seems weird, but it seemed like something that we only talk about, not something that actually is a thing.
It exists, yeah.
So, Joel Ede writes in, do you foresee a world in which we need to be, you know, thinking about responsive design for watches? Like, is it going to go that far? Do we need to care? Can we not care what our websites look on a phone, or do we have to care?
Oh man, I don't want to care. I just don't. So I don't care.
What does your website look like at 90 pixels wide?
Oh,
you know, it's weird. I think any browser that is going to be on a watch is probably going to be very terrible. Right?
Yeah.
So, or Opera Mini, which I'll classify as terrible. But how do you, you got to be prepared, right? I don't know. How do you handle the oncoming Internet of Things, Nathaniel?
I drink heavily. I watch a lot of movies. I don't know. It seems like it's that watch, man. It makes my head hurt. It's kind of like when responsive design came, I was like, oh yeah, this makes sense. This does make sense. And I kind of adopted it with, you know, arms open. When the watch came, I was like, there's just no way you could code for like a circle or a square or a triangle. I don't know what they're going to come out with, but it's just like, and that browser, whew, have you seen the browser on these things?
No, there's really, is there one? I was going to say, like, design for these things is a totally interesting topic. Like, how things look on the screen is totally interesting. How a website works on it is like, who cares? It's not, that's totally inappropriate, I think. And it would be inappropriate for the browser to not just be something like Safari Reader. You know, it should just go to the website and it should just automatically apply the reader thing to it. If it allows you to go to a website at all. Are you saying that it, I didn't know that. Is this a, you really can just type in any old URL you want?
You really can. And it's really Opera Mini-ish. And you really, it really hurts your eyes. So, I mean, it's going to be a thing. So I don't know. It sounds like something I'm just going to have to just wait for. I'm not really going to prepare for it. It's crazy. Yeah.
That's a pretty reasonable approach. Let's just let it come out and see what's up. And if you know, if there's people writing into your website like, I'm trying to buy a watch from your website on my watch and I can't, then we'll be like, oh, maybe we'll have to try that. But, you know, I guess we shouldn't solve this problem before it is one, I guess.
No. Just hide everything. Just display none on your website.
Display none.
Under 90 pixels, display none. All. Done.
Man, I'm curious, like, does it, so here's my thing about watches and smart devices and whatever, I don't know, little fanny packs that like also give you notifications, like how, like I feel like the watches are either like monitors like Fitbits, you know, like health or activity trackers plus like a notification machine, right? Yeah.
But once you click on the notification, say, you know, it's a tweet that says, hey, check out this cool website. You click on it. You're going to go to the web.
Right. You're going to go to the web on a very underpowered device that has a really, I mean, your input method is like the size of the device. It's very crazy.
It is.
I'm curious. Yeah. I don't know. I just wonder if I like hate it. I have no doubt that like the future of human beings will be like having smart devices and stuff like that. You know, like that's how, where sci-fi is headed or whatever. Like in every sci-fi movie, there's a guy with a fancy, you know, touch watch or whatever. But like, I feel very interested or like, I don't know. I have the choice of whether or not I want to partake in that, you know?
Right.
I don't know. Just kind of like, yeah, I don't want that. I don't know. Although I did have an idea for a smartwatch app and it kills me because I don't want a smartwatch, but I really want this app. So there you go. I mean, a catch 22.
It should be, you should make a phone version of your over or under game or whatever that was.
Oh yeah, dude. That would be good watch game too.
It would.
Oh crap.
Mr. Adam Erickson writes in, what are some good strategies for dealing with tabular data in responsive design? I have a short list of, let's say, five things with five attributes. And so like a 5x5 table, let's say. We can all picture that, right? And it works fine on desktop, he's saying. But as you shrink the width, you know, responsive design, this 5x5 table it's not fitting on mobile. So Adam is thinking of ways to approach this responsive table. One, he says, display less data. just show less. Two, shrink the font size until it is infinitesimally small. Three, change the direction of it, essentially. So number one, the display less data. Have you guys seen that one where they're like, you just kind of chop off columns from it? And I think the filament group technique there was to have a little menu, which you can open up to add them back if you want. So it's like they're not there by default, but you can put them back if you want. Shrink the font size till it's infinitesimally small. That seems like a bad idea. I mean, I guess maybe if you could still zoom on the page, maybe that would be acceptable. That seems weird, though. I would probably cross off number two from your list. And three was to change the structure of it, like flip it on its side, right? That's one that I wrote about a long time ago. It's kind of like we can use like pseudo elements to, you know, make things display block instead of display table cell and kind of stack them vertically instead of the other way around. You're repeating some data, but at least you can do it in one narrow column then instead of in a table. That's a cool way to do it. There is a I guess on your list, Adam, a fourth way, and there's probably some other ways. One of them is just make the table horizontally scrollable, which is fine too. You know, I think that didn't make the early cuts because I think there was some mobile problems with that. But now they're not there anymore. I can't remember exactly what I'm missing there. But have you ever approached responsive tables in your days, Nathaniel?
I have. I do like the stack method. Once you get to a certain width where you can't fit anything, you just kind of stack it in a different location. And then I kind of fake the table with like ordered list just to make it easier. But I don't recommend getting rid of stuff. And the scroll thing is kind of cool. It's hard to do, especially when you're using like frameworks, JavaScript frameworks to kind of scroll off. You're going to have to bring in like jQuery UI, which no one ever wants to use, or some other crazy thing. To make it scrollable across all the devices. But yeah, just stacking it a little different way is kind of the way that I go.
So sometimes you need to fix parts of it as well, which is why you might need a JavaScript framework, I think, because I don't like position sticky, or I don't know. I don't think the CSS tools are quite there to have really solid sticky columns and or rows at the same time, because sometimes the point of a table is cross-referencing. And so if you just like just change the format of the table entirely, it might make it really hard to do any cross-referencing. So it's not going to work. There's actually a blog post on the Cloud 4 blog that's picking a responsive table solution that says you should choose a solution here based on what the user needs to do with that data. And that's certainly the correct approach here. It's not just like, you know, pick an approach and then jam the table into it. Think about how people need to use this table and then pick a solution based on that. So I'll drop that in the show notes. I think that's the one to read.
Table Saw JS from Filament Group is a good one.
I think Table Saw has all of the solutions packed together. So it's kind of,
Yeah, they got these like little swipe tables. Like you're like left column is sticky and then you just kind of swipe the other ones. They've got like that priority one where you say like this one should show. So I like it. Should we go to the next question? Hey, so this one, I'm going off menu, but Matt Soria, Poop Splat on Twitter.
Oh, I like this one. I forgot to put it in the notes. I'm glad you...
This is a good little, like, hey, think about it. This is good. Standards pushed us to code more consciously. RWD put the focus on accessibility plus performance. What's the next push? Nathaniel.
For accessibility,
it's a huge question, right? It's kind of like in the way long ago, web standards got us thinking about, you know, this, and now responsive web design came along and we started thinking about multiple devices and performance. It's like, what comes after that? That's a big question, you know, like what's going to be the big thing that comes along that we start caring about?
I love how Dave puts this question on me, because I don't really know the answer to that. If I did, I'd go play the lottery tonight. web standards. I don't know. It has to be these watches, and they're crazy little sizes, and the way that you touch them with a huge finger, but you kind of touch like one pixel with a 4,000 pixel thumb. it's crazy. I just kind of try to live in the now, and I don't really prepare for the future because I don't have that much alcohol on hand. If I did, then this would be like top of the list. I don't have an answer for that one. Dave?
No, thank you. I don't. So my typical answer is always like smaller, faster, better, you know, like more lightweight, more, you know, we're going to shave more kilobytes. We're going to optimize our images. Actually, this time we're going to, you know, it's like, it's going to load good, load more good, you know? So that's like my typical answer to this question, but,
that's kind of an extension of accessibility and performance.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just that,
just more of that.
Well, so I don't know. So the smartwatch angle is very weird because, like, that's actually going to put that more in the spotlight, right? Like, if people are starting to browse the websites on their wrists, like, now, dude, like, your website has to be work on an even more underpowered device than a phone, which is like a nightmare, you know, to think about. So what so that push might still be the same, but I'm also kind of wondering if, like, I wonder if we're set up for another big design swing, kind of like richer design and stuff like that, just because, like, responsive web design came out, vector or like retinas came out all at the same time. And so we had to kind of scale back and, like, learn SVG and do all that stuff. But I'm sort of wondering if, like, now it's about to get, like, super rich. Like, you know, if you go to CodePen, there's, you know.
So you think the design swing might be kind of going old school, getting a little bit more intense? We've lived through the less.
Yeah, well, and, you know, everyone's always like, all the websites look the same, you know. And it's like, well, people are going to start maybe trying to stand out a bit, you know. But what does that mean? I don't really know what that answer is, so. That's what I'm thinking.
I wonder if there, I also share that, like, it, maybe what goes around comes around kind of thing. Maybe we'll experience a new, you know what I mean? Like, something that's old becomes new again. Like, maybe there'll be a major UX focus again, or maybe, you know, so many people are using the web and so many young people are using the web that the main thing we'll be talking about will be, you know, kind of an ethics thing, or, like, you know, being really careful what we do with the people that use our websites and their type of, you know what I mean? Like a security and ethics and responsibility kind of thing with websites and how that ties with UX. I know that's pretty broad, but maybe that will be the big topic, making sure we're doing right by our users. Or tech, you know, maybe the idea is that we don't have to worry about performance as much if technology can save us. Maybe some stuff will start happening to browsers and networks and things that that open up new doors. You know, like HTTPS everywhere and HTTP2, and maybe browsers start doing some insane stuff that make websites really, really fast. That would fuel Dave's thing that, you know, we don't have to be quite as performance driven as we are now because browsers are helping us so much, you know. Probably not, but maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Interesting.
You can never predict the, you know, like Nathaniel was saying, we just have no idea, you know, what the next huge thing.
Christopher Schmidt, speaking of RWD Summit, is saying like 3D is kind of a thing, like a shade of 3D. Google's material design has a little bit of depth in 3D, sort of.
But maybe we just go full bore on 3D or something. I mean, that seems like a little thing. WebGL. Is that going to be? I don't think subtle 3D is going to be the next RWD. You know,
probably more the like textured button kind of thing. But I don't know. It was a good question. I thought it was set up nice. Usually these questions are like, what's the future of web design? You know, colors, shapes, and fonts or
triangles.
Yeah. Like, so, but this was set up in the very, like, you know, standards was about better code and like responsibility. And then like RWD was about performance. So what's next, you know, or RWD kind of focused on accessibility and performance, or ended up that way. So what's next? So I thought that was a good way to frame that question. So
sweet. Should we do a quick one before we?
One more. Let's spin the old wheel of questions.
Let's pick Michael. Knepreth. Shoot. It says hard. I can't remember how you pronounce a letter when it says hard or soft version of it. You know what I mean? Like, what's a hard K sound like? And what's a soft K sound like? You guys, those are the same. See, I told you it's hard. Michael Knepreth writes in, what's the best way to transition to a Flexbox layout from a more established site? Does it require a full reworking, or is there a way to introduce it gradually? What makes more sense? Have you played it with Flexbox, Nathaniel?
I have, and thanks to your brilliant post that keeps improving and improving, I was able to use it on our last project.
Nice.
The only way I could bring in Flexbox is to get the client to say IE9 or IE10 and above.
Right.
Other than that, you can't really bring it in. But it's I love Flexbox and I love where it's going. It is the future. I mean, when that thing gets totally supported, I'll be happier, man. So
yeah. Nice. So what did you got to work on it from an established from a new project? So you were able to this thing makes sense as Flexbox. You didn't have to be like, this is currently using Float and we're going to move it to Flexbox.
No, I wouldn't suggest kind of like optimizing for it unless you're really clear of those older browsers that are not going to support it. And I mean, it's beautiful stuff. It's I would love to use it every time, but I just can't. And I was really happy to just get to use it on this last project, because we literally had like six columns that were 25% a piece, and we were allowed to put it into a full, full width container. And it was like 150% when it got done, but it all, fit off screen and it floated on nicely. And it was really nice. But if I were kind of upgrade from a float or an inline block or something like that, I think I'd have a lot of trouble doing that.
Yeah. That's nice. That's that it allowed you to do kind of an extra long container with, because float would be difficult to do that on. There's no way really. You'd have to make the parent container wider to allow it, or use some kind of white space, no wrappy hacky thing, which wouldn't work with float. You'd have to use inline block then and stuff. Yeah, that's an interesting one I hadn't thought of. I actually, to speak to Michael's question about transitioning from an established site, I actually do this regularly. Find something that's using float, and I'll be like, all I'm doing here really is putting two or three things in a row. So to just turn off float and say, take the parent and say, display flex on it. Sometimes you have to do nothing. Sometimes you can even take off the widths and stuff, and it just kind of naturally just is exactly what you wanted to, which is nice. Assuming you're, using like auto prefixer and making it do all the fallback stuff for you, which of course you should be, but sometimes it's really easy. It's, to use some of the like more specific features of Flexbox, like, I don't know, Nathaniel said he had six items that were 25% wide, I was like, oh, cool, are you going to do the thing where you do flex wrap and then let the two that fall down be 50% wide? Because that's a thing that Flexbox can do. That's more of a thing that you have to kind of think about Flexbox from the beginning for.
Right.
But transitioning from a gritty situation, like just some things in a row, is like pretty easy to transition to with Flexbox. But again, like Nathaniel said, definitely you have to consider that older browser situation. A lot, there are ways to like, fall back to display table and that kind of thing. But I'm like, if display table can do exactly what you want Flexbox to do, then just use it, I think.
Here's my prediction. It's going to be a rough year for IE8 this year. That's my prediction. My thing is like, I've started using Flexbox. It's just like, just to get the idea out, and then I'm going to care a lot less when it comes back to like IE8 bug testing, like even I'm just going to be like, column of content. That's what you get. We tried really hard. So.
That's true. The fallback can doesn't have to be exact, right? You could it could be, I don't know, you could do cool things with Flexbox and then fall back to a column, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So bad. I use it pretty everywhere, but that's just because I am lucky and I get to decide what browsers we support based on my emotions that day.
We don't support Opera anymore.
Yeah.
New rule.
Yeah.
New rule.
I went to the Opera last night and it was dumb.
New rule.
All right. So that was good.
We should wrap it up. Nathaniel, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it and sharing your Nerf assassination tools. We really appreciate that. For those who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that? And then what's one big thing you'd like to plug before you leave us today?
All right. So if you want to follow me, Nathaniel Deal, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, Flickr, all that crazy stuff, those social media things. If you want to give me money, I accept Bitcoin. No, I don't know what that is.
My wallet is
YRZKPFFRRRRQ. I mean, I am starting to sell these Nerf guns. I actually got my first commission last year. The end of last year. So I'm doing the next blaster I'll be doing will be a commission for the Gears of War Lancer. And ooh, that's actually done. It's got the working chainsaw in it. And just it's really powerful. It's a really cool looking blaster. I'll put some stuff on that up in probably a couple weeks when it's done. If you want to buy a crazy Nerf gun, yeah, hit me on YouTube or I'm on Etsy, whatever that is. I'd like to plug my awesome company, 352. Love you guys. Thank you for employing me and giving me money to buy cupcakes for my children because that's what they love to eat. They don't eat food. I just feed their cupcake powered. It's a new thing. Once you have kids, you'll understand. But other than that, guys, thank you for having me on here. It was an awesome time.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And
you can totally buy these things on Etsy. Good work, man. Judge Dredd Log Giver custom Nerf gun with holster and fully working LEDs. Yeah, what? That's awesome. Yeah, okay. People, we have a, you know, thanks so much for being on, Nathaniel. We get to work out how I'm going to transition this, but at the end of the show, folks, I'm going to be telling you about a job. Shop Talk Show is we're going to be getting people hired here. That's the plan anyway. CodePen has a new job board. You know, I work on CodePen. It's the Shop Talk job board. It's the CSS Tricks job board. We're trying to get people to post their jobs on there and connect people with employers and, you know, have this be a part of what we do here on Shop Talk Show. So, we're going to mention jobs specifically sometimes. This one is a company called Nine Shot Golf Innovations up in Vancouver, Canada. So Canadians, great. Or if you're sick of America and want to move to Canada like you always threaten to, you can do that. Vancouver is a lovely town. It's kind of like a seaport town. They have seaplanes that take off from there. It's super cool. I love Vancouver. Anyway, and if you like golf, I guess you wouldn't need to, though. Like, you can be a front-end developer at somewhere that you don't have to love golf. Presumably, it would be a bonus if you love golf. But I like that they put as the under nice to have, too, that for this role, you've made contributions to the online community through sites like Dribbble, CodePen, and GitHub. GitHub was the last of those three. See that? CodePen was a, I don't know, that was funny. But anyway, Nine Shot Golf Innovations is they're building this, they have this product called Lesson Tracks, which is for golf instructors to schedule things with the people that want to take lessons from them. So it's this golf-specific scheduling thing, but they're building an online lesson platform for golf. So it's kind of like if you're into golf or just into building interesting websites, check out that thing. It's, you know, you're a front-end developer doing front-end type of stuff. You live and breathe HTML and CSS, you know, 2 years experience, that type of thing. Let's get somebody working up there in Vancouver, Canada at Nine Shot Golf Innovations. Should be pretty cool. Anyway, that's a new spot, like a action item you can do.
If get you're a new job, 2015.
Yeah. Tell them make you listen to Shop Talk Show because that will, like, they'll make you look good when you're.
So head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs. To get yourself a brand new job.
And we'll put a link to that specific job in the show notes, too. Okay. Perfect.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks for coming down to the chat room. You guys keep us factual and on task. We really appreciate that. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. We are probably today, the day that this thing comes, we're probably launching a brand new website of the Shop Talk Show. And if we messed up your RSS feeds, we really apologize, but we're trying not to do that. And I also want to say thank you. We had an emergency and we had to move all of our MP3s and stuff over to this site called Simplecast FM. They're really awesome. They're helping us out. And if you're starting a podcast, they're a really great place to get off the ground. So, bandwidth consideration brought to you by Simplecast. And we really appreciate that. And okay. Thank you, everybody. Follow us at Shop Talk Show. Chris, you got anything?
ShopTalkShow.com.
ShopTalkShow.com.